East Carolina Manuscript Collection, Oral History Interview conducted February the 6th, 1995 with Lieutenant Colonel William McReynolds, U.S. Marine Corps retired, graduate U.S. Naval Academy class of 1941. This is reel number 2 of interview number 1. This tape runs for approximately 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay, they sent a reconnaissance party ashore because they didn't know whether British Samoa was still on our side or not. The reconnaissance party, of course, found out from the natives ashore and the administrative authorities that everything was okay, so then we proceeded to land across the docks there. We didn't go into the beach. The ships couldn't go all the way in. We had to be ferried back and forth on the landing craft that all our ships carried. But we got ashore and set up a camp on a point that at least the battery or the part of the battalion that I was assigned to, even though I was supposed to be the naval gunfire officer, I was assigned to one of the batteries to locate me, since we didn't have any naval gunfire to adjust. And we were on a little point just outside of Apia. And it was very pleasant there under the palm trees. There was an old German magnetic studying in magnetic station to study the Earth's magnetic force in that area. I don't know what type of experiments they had been running back when Samoa was in German hands before World War I. But Samoa was administered by New Zealand at the time we were there. And there were some New Zealand guys stationed also, some communicators out on that point. They had a radio station, and I think they gave us all the news about what was going on around us. And I didn't realize that we were really in a war zone, because it was so peaceful, and it took me back to all the books I'd read by Nordhoff and Hall about the South Pacific and the beautiful natives and the swaying palms and the coconut trees and all of the nice things about it. And I decided I'd explore. So I got a Jeep, and driving it myself, I went down the coast, passed some Marines doing something, and kept going, asked some natives where there was a good place to go swimming, and they all climbed aboard immediately to show me. So there I was with a Jeep load of natives, and we went down and found this place where there was a little surf, but the coral's so close into shore there, it's not very comfortable to swim. But anyhow, went swimming, got through, and then I couldn't get rid of the natives. They wouldn't get out of the Jeep going back. So here I come down the road with all these Jeeps, and got stopped by a major, and it turned out to be Major Green, who later became Commandant of the Marine Corps. And he got my name and file number and outfit and reported me to the battalion commander. And the battalion commander was kind of nice about it, but he knew he had to do something because this guy was up on the brigade staff, and he was, in fact, he was the G3. And so I got 10 days hack. Actually, I didn't get 10 days hack. I got unofficially restricted to camp for an indefinite period of time. So then, in order to go out of camp, I'd go and ask for permission to take my laundry out. The task force that made up this brigade had included four unmanned 105 howitzers, and they didn't belong to any battery. They just belonged to the brigade, and the brigade assigned them, of course, the 1st Battalion 11th, and said, we don't have prime movers for them, but we can put them in a fixed position for defense. So they made up a battery with two officers and maybe 40 or 50 enlisted for this, with these 105 howitzers. And those were the first 105s that I'd ever seen. And we put them in position later on when we put them in position up near where we were building an airfield, pretty well out from Apia, about 20 miles up the island. And we went into position, built log and revetments around them and all that. Registered them out on the reef someplace. The rest of the battalion was stationed more up in the hinterlands, where their maneuverability, since they had the prime movers, and on top of that they were little guns. They were 75 pack howitzers that could be broken down and carried by the men that manned them. They were in positions also for the defense of the perimeter, but were were more mobile. You know, from where we were, if there had been an assault landing against us, after we knocked out the first few boats, we probably would have been taken out. We stayed there. See, we got there in around the end of April, 1st of May, and we were there about half the summer when the 7th Marines and the 1st Battalion 11th were moved on. Now, I've got to regress a little. On the way out, on the transport, we got an all-nav that promoted all of the second lieutenants on the ship just about to first lieutenant. Well, as soon as we got to Samoa, we got another all-nav that promoted all of these guys to captain.
Wow.
So,
talk about moving up in rank.
Within a few months, yeah, the place was full of captains. Everybody was, the lowest rank officer was a captain, except for warrants, who didn't get this treatment. Anyhow, we when the brigade was being readied to, or not the brigade, but the 7th Marines were being readied to leave, the 22nd Marines arrived with an artillery battalion and all the fixings. And they were a brand new regiment, and they had Boku second lieutenants, so they transferred them into the 7th Marines and 1st Battalion 11th, and transferred the excess captains. And of course, since I wasn't in one of the regular 1st Battalion 11th batteries, I was transferred to the 22nd Marines. And I went into the weapons company, the regimental weapons company, which had some 75 millimeter French guns, but mounted on half-track weapons carriers. They had two of those or three of those, and they had a bunch of 37 millimeter anti-tank guns mounted on little three-quarter ton cargo trucks for weapons carriers. And they also had a lot of heavy machine guns and that sort of thing. And I became kind of the operations officer of this outfit. And the commander was a major, Major Seesward, who was a pretty nice guy. I think he was... I really never got to judge how he was in the field, because we sat in camp the whole time in one place and played with these guns. Never fired, never did anything like that. And I was there only a month about when I was got orders to go back to the States. Another captain and I that had come from the 11th Marines. So we were transferred back to the States, flew out of Western Samoa on a PBY, which took off from the new fighter strip the Seabees had just finished. And I happened to get a seat on... most of the guys that were being flown out were down in kind of the hold of the seaplane, and I couldn't get any place, so I flipped down a seat that is used by a gunner in one of those glass bubbles that's on the side of the airplane. And I was sitting in this thing, and the plane got down to the end of the runway and started droning away to take off, and all I could see were these 3 or 4 foot stumps coming at us, and just almost when they got to us, we started to lift off, and at about that point I stood up to look at them, and the seat I was sitting on went bang on the bulkhead. And all these poor guys down in the hold didn't know what was going on. And they started to come rushing out, and I said, no, no, it's okay. And I guess if they'd all rushed out, that plane would have squashed in for sure. We went over to Pango in American Samoa, and we're supposed to go out on the Lurline, and she hadn't come in yet. I had a day or so of fooling around. I went out to one of the cruisers that was in port to look up classmates. As I recall, I ran into Burbage out there, and he had the deck, and It was interesting to see those old ships. They were really old. Mm-hmm. Those old, was the...
That's done pre-World War One, right?
World War One cruisers, the Richmond class or something like that. Four stacks. They looked like an oversized destroyer from the distance, but they were pretty good-sized ships. They were about 7,000 or 8,000 tons. I guess they're about the size of what the 963-class destroyer is now. then we returned to the States on the Lurline. She had a cruising pattern in which she zigzagged a little bit during the daytime, but at night she went all out. At night she was really going. You couldn't stand on deck. It was so strong. Wind was so strong. Because I guess she was going flank speed all night long. We got back to the States in a hurry. I'd never known it was so easy to cross the Pacific. Another interesting thing about that ship was that she had been pressed into military service with the only thing that had been done was they changed her, put a new coat of gray paint on her, and she still had all the stores for her civilian cruise travel. And it was surprising the things they were serving up, frog's legs and interesting.
There were a lot of you
French cuisine and all kinds of things.
There were a lot of you who crossed on the Lurline.
In the Lurline, yeah. And we got back to San Diego and I don't know how I knew of it, but I knew one of my classmates, Dick Harrison, lived down at the...
Now, is this in 43 or...
No, this is in 42.
Still in 42, thank you.
Yeah, this is around September 42. Dick Harrison, who had also gone in the Marine Corps in the class of 41, he was stationed in the San Diego area, and he had a house down on the beach at near Mission Bay. And I've been out there since, and I'm surprised. I walked out from the Embarcadero. I walked out to his house at Mission Beach. Taxis were practically non-existent, and I just started walking that way and it got there. Had a visit with him, and then, of course, promptly got orders. Hey, let's stop the thing. My orders were endorsed to go to the Commanding General Amphibious Forces Pacific Fleet for duty at San Diego. Then I was ordered to the advanced echelon of the 3rd Marine Division, and they put me in the 12th Marines. And upon reporting your to the 12th Marines, I was granted leave expiring October 11th. And then from the 11th, from the headquarters 12th Marines, I was ordered to report to the headquarters 4th Battalion 12th Marines and assigned duty with headquarters and service battery. That was it. So that's what that was my next step was being assigned to the 12th Marines. Now, the 12th Marines were at the were at a place out in the Imperial Valley called Camp Dunlop, and they were that was in an artillery range area near the Chocolate Mountains. It's still a bombing range that the Navy uses. It was very interesting because we had all this area to maneuver in and fire in, and get trained up. And it was very good. So I was in the 3rd Division and stayed there for a little while. Then I got orders to in along about November, I got orders to come east to Washington to attend the Naval Photo Interpretation School.
Excuse me just one minute, Carlos.
I got orders to attend the Naval Photo Interpretation School. So I had come east on leave, and I forget how I did it, but I came east on leave and then drove back with my wife, whom I'd married while we were down in Camp Lejeune, mm-hmm. and drove back with my wife and reported for duty, and she was staying in a hotel in Brawley, California, which is in the Imperial Valley. And then along about November, I got orders to go back to photo interpretation school in Washington again. Well, I guess my car was pretty economical because I still had the ration tickets for gasoline enough to drive back to Washington. Right. And it was a 41 Chevrolet that I'd bought when I was at Parris Island. So we debated trying to make it. The orders were very specific. I had to report in I think 4 days to this place. And they figured that was the amount of time you needed to travel by train. But we couldn't get on a train. So we drove back in 3 days. And that was
quite a drive with the
quite a drive.
Highways in 41 and 43.
Well, it was very fast until you got to the Mississippi. After you cross the Mississippi, you're in a lot of towns and a lot of hogback roads and mountains and that kind of thing. And we got stopped near Nashville, Tennessee, by Army MPs who said we were speeding. Well, they couldn't know we were speeding because they stopped us as we drove down the road. And anyhow, we had just come out of a restaurant.
What did MPs have to do with it, unless you were on a military base?
Well, we were in an area that was kind of being run by the military. And so they dragged me into the provost marshal's office. And I showed him my orders and said, I'm under orders on the way to this thing in Washington, and I'd appreciate it if you'd let me go because I don't have much time. And they got all the things. And, okay, well, your commanding officer will find out about it. You were speeding. I asked, how did you? Nobody paced me or anything. These MPs stopped me on the road, And he said, oh, the sheriff's office reported it. I said, big deal. Anyhow, we proceeded on our way, and we got to Washington on time. And the only other mishap we had on that trip was to stay awake. I'd been drinking coffee out of a thermos, and one night I'd forgotten how long that coffee had been in the thermos, and it had gotten some kind of food poisoning started, and I got food poisoning just as we got into Little Rock, Arkansas. And we had to lay over one night early. Otherwise, we were driving all night every night. Well, after that tour was over, at temporary duty, we drove back out west, and I prevailed on the rationing board in Washington to give me a couple of tires, because my tires were starting to go out, and some more gasoline coupons, which they reluctantly did. And so we drove back out. And I think...
That's why I stop using this sometimes. It just cut itself off for no reason.
Okay, when I got back out there, I was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, and they in turn assigned me as CO of Fox Battery, 2nd Battalion, 12th Marines. And that was a big thrill for me because at last I was a commanding officer or something. I enjoyed the training. I really had worked that battery up into a pretty efficiently operating artillery unit. And we went on maneuvers out to San Clemente Island and landed with the infantry there and had this maneuver. Then we came back and put ashore in San Diego and got the whole battery in its organic vehicles in our trucks, our little... Back then, the pack howitzer batteries were equipped with 1.5-ton 4x4 trucks, little pickup trucks. And the troops sat in the open in them, and we started over the mountains. By then, it was getting along in the year, and it was winter, in fact. And when we got up in the mountains to get over into the Imperial Valley, it was freezing. Everybody was freezing. I was freezing, and here I was sitting in a Jeep, but these guys in these trucks must have been really desperate, and we stopped every now and then to let everybody run around and warm up. And I kept thinking, well, as soon as we get down in the valley, it'll be warm. Well, when we got down in the valley, it was still freezing cold. We had to drive about 50 miles up to camp. But I guess we all survived it. That was the episode of the going through the mountains in California in winter, in summer uniforms. As soon as I got back down there, somebody had cooked up a thing where an officer had reported into the 12th Marines, who was some kind of a congressman who was on active duty in the Marine Corps, and they wanted him to have command of a battery. So I lost my battery to this guy and had a big change of command ceremony and turned it over to him. And I became the battalion intelligence officer. And shortly after that, I got orders to go to Fort Sill for the field officer's course there, which was an 8-week course. So I went to Fort Sill, and when I came back from Fort Sill, the 3rd Marine Division had picked up and gone, and I didn't even know it. And there was quite a bit of consternation when I reported back in at Amphibious Corps headquarters. They were a little upset that somehow or other I hadn't been informed, or that they put it on me that I hadn't informed the 12th Marines that I was still there or something. Anyhow, I sat a whole day in the outer office of the general, and while everybody argued about what to do with this errant captain.
Where had the 3rd Battalion gone?
The whole 3rd Marine Division had mounted up and gone to the out in the Pacific.
So they were already.
They'd been deployed. Okay, yeah. Okay. So they finally gave up and thought that, and I guess they figured, well, whatever he did, I guess it's legal. We'll have to let it go this time. And I was sent up to Camp Pendleton to report to the 14th Marines. I reported into the 14th and was assigned to the 2nd Battalion. And there were a number of other people. Dutch Spritzen was there. And later Fox Perry showed up. And there was a number of us there. And just having come from Fort Sill, I was made the battalion operations officer, the S3. And I started writing up all our training schedules and writing the field exercise problems and all that. And had a big hand in the training of that whole battalion, and I was very proud of that. And let's see, Dutch Spritzen was assigned to, I think, the 4th Battalion of the 14th Marines. Mm-hmm. I was in the 2nd as the S3, and Fox Perry developed an illness from the medication he was taking for malaria that he'd gotten on Guadalcanal, and he went in the hospital. In fact, they had him in the psychiatric ward there because the effects of the medication made him seem to be out of his mind. And so we lost him. And I've got a book that Fox read. Have you heard of that book?
What's the name of it?
The name is 3 War Marine.
I haven't read it.
Okay. But I found out how he got out of that situation. He called to some guy walking by outside the hospital and said, please mail this letter. And he mailed this letter to his father, who was a judge up in Pennsylvania, in Philly. Huh. And his father started working, pulling ropes from the other end, and got Fox properly treated and out of that situation. That was kind of bad. Yeah. It would be a hell of a thing to get caught in.
So he hadn't been permitted to communicate with his family at all.
No.
Wow, that would be.
He couldn't send any letters out, at least not without him cutting all the reference to his illness out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that was an aside. So we lost Fox from the 14th Marines. I stayed with the 2nd Battalion 14th and became the executive officer before we shipped out. We finally shipped out right around the first of the year, because we were on board ship already and celebrated New Year's Eve in the hotel at San Diego, and all our family and women folks came down, and by then we'd had our first baby, and my wife brought the baby with her, and we were all gathering in this hotel. What was the name of it? Can't remember the name of it. It was a beautiful hotel up on a hill. And I had rushed right in, and I took the last room, which was the big suite they had. The last rooms available in the hotel. Mm-hmm. I took this big suite. And my boss came in about 10 minutes later, and he asked for a room. And the clerk says, "I'm sorry, sir, but by then I'd made major. That major right over there took the last room we had." And he was really fuming. Maybe that's what started me downhill, taking the last room from my battalion commander. We went out on an LST. I was on this ship with one of the firing batteries of the battalion, and the rest of the battalion was, there was a firing battery on each of other LSTs, and the headquarters was on a transport. And we were going directly from the States via Hawaii to the objective, which was Kwajalein. Right. And we were out of port about 3 days, and our ship was loaded with landing vehicle tracked, LVTs, mm-hmm. and our guns and equipment were in these to be landed with those. So we were out about 3 days, and we got into a hell of a storm, and an LST rolls pretty bad anyhow, but in the storm it was rolling something fierce. And with the a young and untrained crew, they had not properly chained down the vehicles, and they started sliding around on the tank deck. And they were sliding these LVTs and go from one side to the other and punch holes in the bulkhead on the side. Fortunately, it wasn't the side of the ship. It was the troop compartment. It was punching holes in. And then the ship would take another roll and it'd all slide back. And so the skipper broke convoy position and headed straight into the storm, so that he was pitching instead of rolling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And got all the vehicles that slid down to one side, so he had his crew chain them down there, and we had the Marines down there working too. And so when they finally got everything secured, they picked up course again, and where's the convoy? And we were in radio silence, so we were lost from the convoy completely. He tried working out a problem. He knew where the convoy should have been going, but it was in a wild zigzag pattern.
It's a big ocean out there.
It was a good deal of ocean. And in LST, you can't get up very high to see anything else. So he tried to work out a maneuvering board problem where he'd intercept the convoy, but you know, those ships had about 8.5 knots flat out, and you aren't catching up with anything much, even though he was not zigzagging or anything to slow him down. and we found ourselves completely alone in the ocean. And so I started watching the chart, and there wasn't anything going down on the chart. There's no navigating being done, except for a dead reckoning track. So I asked the skipper if I could take some star shots at morning and evening and the sunlight at noon. And he said, sure. Navigation was one of my good subjects. He said, sure, but don't get in the way of Ensign so-and-so if he wants to use the sextant and the quartermaster to take the time. Mm-hmm. So I got up every morning and took around the stars and took a sunline at noon, and I started plotting a fix. And I was getting real good fixes, you know. You triangulate, and mm-hmm. where if they all three cross in the same point, that's good. And they were all coming close. And I started having three fixes a day and putting them on the chart and initialing them, not putting a course line or anything from them. Then I started seeing course lines being put from my fix. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the skipper was ordering the course according to what we'd fixed. And we didn't zigzag, but a little. I don't even think it was effective. We were maybe changing course 20 or 30 degrees every hour or so. I don't think it was effective at all, but it made him feel better. And from my calculations, I wrote down one morning, I think we'll have landfall at 12 noon on such and such a date. And by God, there it was, 12 noon. Now Wheelie Wheelie Bay, right on the nose.
Wow.
I felt very proud of that. My first and only navigation exercise.
Interesting. Interesting.
We got into Nawili Wheelie Bay, and the ship, the LSTs didn't have evaporators, so they couldn't make their own water. We had to take on water there. And fortunately, we were there 24 hours ahead of the convoy.
I was getting ready to say, had the convoy arrived ahead of you?
We were there 24 hours. We got a choice spot on the right against the bulkhead, and we informed them that we need water, and they dragged out a garden hose to put water in the ship. I said, my God, how will they do the whole outfit? We got all our water, and then when the others came in, we had to move outboard and let them take on water, too, from the garden hose.
So that's the only water supply they had?
That's about the only way they had to deliver it. We left there again in proper convoy, and and we're, maybe halfway to Kwajalein when somebody on one of the other ships got acute appendicitis. And our ship had the doctor on board. So they transferred him in a stretcher across to our ship, and they rigged the ward room in the LST as an operating room, and took my cabin away from me, and I had to go in and bunk with the executive officer to use for sick quarters for this guy after he'd been operated on. And in order to calm the ship during the operation, we once again headed into the seas. And once again, I was afraid we'd get lost from the convoy, but we didn't. We picked him up again the next day.
Wow.
But that was another interesting episode.
It is.
That LST had been commissioned about 3 months before. It was built up near Chicago when came, and the crew commissioned it up there and came down the waterway to the Mississippi and out the Mississippi through the canal and up to San Diego to take us aboard.
So it was a brand new vessel.
Brand new ship and a brand new crew. The gunnery sergeant in the battery that was with us had more sea duty time than anybody else on the ship, and I had more sea duty time than the skipper. And while we were on our practice landings off San Clemente Island before we left the States, the LSTs originally had been built with a cable to hoist the bow ramp. When we were out in the sea launching these LVTs, of course it was made for the ship to beach and drop the ramp on the beach, on a hard sand beach, and the tanks to disembark onto the beach, and then the ramp would be pulled up by these cables. Well, out in the seas, the ramp would get up.